something on Tzaddikim Lamed Aleph by the Mishnah. More on the topic of cases where there's overlapping claims. So the previous Mishnah had two, had a case of two wives. Now we're going to have three, and the next Mishnah is going to have four. Mishnah in Nasi Shalosh Nashim, somebody was married to three wives, and Rashi explains over here that it has to be that he married all three of them at the same time. So all the Ksubas have the same date. Because otherwise, the Mishnah is going to be talking about which one has, none of them has precedence over the other. Therefore, we talk about the various ways in which they're going to have to divide the property in order to collect their ksubas. Here we're talking about where the women outlive, where all three women outlive the husband. So there's no ksubas bin indicher, and the women themselves are entitled to collect their ksubas. But if he had married the first one first, and then later on another one, and so forth, then whichever one comes first would have the upper hand over here as far as collecting. But here we're talking about he married all three of them at the same time. And Aflaw wants to argue with that. He wants to say that maybe you can't marry two women.
The same day.
Yeah, the same day. And Aflaw wants to argue with that. He says that maybe you can't marry more than one woman on the same day because Ein Ma'ariv and Simcha b'Simcha. So maybe we'd have to be talking about that he married them at different times, but the Ksubas all are dated the same day. However, he says that, you know, the Rambam does say, l'halacha, that you're allowed to marry many wives on one day. You just need to give each one her own Sheva Brachas. And he says, maybe the Rambam got that from this Mishnah.
Could you write that story without the date?
You can write a ksuba without a date, I think, yeah, but I mean, it's not in the woman's interest because then she can't be toteth. Then, yeah. Yeah, okay.
At all?
Not at all, but if she can't, well, yeah, maybe at all, because then how, she can collect, but she can't collect from the chasim or shabadim. She's not going to be able to collect from any property that the husband sold after the marriage, because how's she going to prove that he owned it at the time they got married, unless she has aiding? Anyway, so okay, Misa is showing us the Shalosh Nashim
Umeis.
It's the
same thing when she's married and she has a. Nobody knows if he owned it at the time she married.
That's the point. So if she has Edim, that's different, yeah. Okay, so Shmi showing us the Shalosh Nashim Umeis and then he died. Ksubasa shall Zumana, shall Zumasayim, shall Shalosh Meis. He had three wives, where the first one's Ksuba is 100, the second 200, the third 300. The Ainsham Elamana. So case number one is there's only a mana, there's only 100 Zuz in the whole estate. Chok and Veshava. Well, then we just divide it all evenly because all of them have an equal claim to that 100. No, none of them has a greater claim than the other. So therefore, you just divide it evenly and everybody gets 33 and a third.
Yeah,
two wives. Hayisham Masayim. What if there's 200? Now, the difference is once there's 200 over there, then the first wife only has a claim on 100 out of that 200. The second 200, she has no business with, because her ksuba is only 100. So what do we do? Shamanan telas chamishim, the one whose ksuba is 100 zuz gets 50. Shamasayim v'shal shloshmeis, shlosha shlosha shal zav. The one who has the 200 and the 300, what they do is they split the remaining 150. They each get three gold dinner. Gold dinner is 25 silver dinner. So therefore, what we're saying is, the first one gets 50, you have left 150, each of them gets 75. Which, you know, the Gemara is going to talk about why that should be. Why is the first one getting half of her claim and the second and third are getting proportionally much less? And we'll talk about that. Now, next case, suppose that there was 300 in the estate. So again, you have the first 100, only the first one has a claim on. The second 100, only the second and the third have a claim on, but not the first. And the third 100, only the third one has a claim on. So, Shalmana Natalas Chamishim. So again, the one whose ksuba was 100 gets 50. V'shalmasayim mana, the one whose ksuba was 200 gets 100. V'shal shloshmei is shisha shalzav, the one who's supposed to get 300 gets 6 gold dinner, 150. So in this case, each of them is getting half of what they should have been entitled to. So we said, but we talked about in the last, we talked about previously in the pays, that we do want to safeguard the wife's right to collect her ksuba, because we don't want to have her skin and blood and nose and notion. People are getting old and not getting married, so the wife was saying, I have no, there's an easy loophole for him to get out of paying the ksuba. After all, I mean, in every case, though, you know, not necessarily is she going to be getting her ksuba in the first place. There's always that risk. If she dies before him, she doesn't collect the ksuba anyway, right? If there's been a different, then they collect, but... So there's always that risk, but what we said before, in the case of a Baal Chayiv, you want to make more certain that he can collect his debt. Shalaitino Pelos Bifrei Loivin, and you don't want to discourage people from lending. In the case of marriage, after all, yes, you want to be able to give her a chance to collect her ksuba, but after all, you know, Tabla Mesa Tandu, a woman would still rather be married than not. And and therefore, so she doesn't manage to collect everything, you know, yeah. And after all, I mean, in this case, there's no choice. The fact is, there's only 300. You can't get any more out of it. V'chein gimel sheitilu l'kis. The same thing happens. You get three people who put money together into a wallet for investment, into a business or whatever. Tichsu ha'isiru. If the value goes up or down, kachin chokin. They divide in the same way. Similar idea according to how much they put in to begin with. So this mission over here and the Gemara that we're going to discuss over here, there's a considerable discussion among the Rishonim what exactly the mechanism is over here, why each one gets the amount that we do. So we'll go through the Gemara, but I'll just mention that, for example, the Rif wrote this and two other sugyas in our Masechta, one previously at the beginning of the eighth perek, the mission over there on Daf Ayin Ches that we mentioned at the time was rather complicated to explain the case. When is a woman allowed to sell the nechassim that she got, that she brought into the marriage? When is she not? So that's our mission over here and our mission and the Gemara on it, and a third one towards the end of the perek, the Rif writes on each one of them. It's there are many different goyim and everybody broke their heads on trying to figure out the exact detail over here. He says, you know what? For each one of them, I had to write a detailed explanation in Arabic in order that a person should be able to understand what's going on. I mean, Arabic to them was like English to us, so like it wasn't enough for him. For the Rif, usually he just excerpts the Mishnah and the Gemara and maybe adds a little bit of commentary from the goyim or whatever. Here he had to write a whole detailed explanation of the sugya in order to make it understandable.
What?
Who? Yisrael Alman, maybe?
Yeah.
Nobel Prize winner, yeah.
You heard
the true Nobel Prize winner, Yisrael Kenneth Alman. Yeah, he won the Nobel Prize in economics a few years back. So you tell us that he wrote something. So he wrote something about this. Interesting. Pity I didn't know that. I would have looked it up. Anyway, yeah. Okay. So the first question the Gemara asks: Shalman and Atelas Chamishim. You're telling me in the second case, when there's 200, or in the third case, when there's 200 or 300 zuz, you're telling me that the one whose ksuba is mana gets 50, half of what she's entitled to. Why? Plus in the tilter, it's plus of a tilter. A mana is 100 zuz, 100 dinar. Zuz and a dinar are the same thing. Why is she getting 50? Shouldn't she only get 33 and a third? Again, she doesn't have any claim whatsoever on the second mana because her whole ksuba is only 100. So why are we saying that she gets half of the first mana when she's one of three equal claimants to that mana? Each of them should be getting 33 and a third, and then the second one will get half of the next mana, so she'll end up with 83 and a third. The third one will get the other half of that mana and the whole third mana if there is one. So she'll end up with 83 or 183 and a third, as the case may be. Why is the first one ending up with 50? Because the case is over here, we're talking about that the one who's supposed to get 200 writes out in a document to the one who has the 100, I'm not going to argue with you. When we come to Beis Din, I'm going to argue with you about the mana that has a shibud to you. You're not going to have to lose out because of my portion. As the Gemara is going to say soon, it's not that she's relinquishing her portion. She still wants to get her portion, but she's saying that instead of that we're going to have to divide each mana as it comes up, we're going to have to sit and figure out a division and go over and over to Beis Din. Instead, I'm willing to set aside. I won't have any claims against one mana. So therefore it's only the 100 and the 300 that are arguing over that first mana. Well, then each of them gets half of it, 50 and 50. The second one is saying, I'll wait and I'll collect what's coming to me out of the second mana, which you, the first one, have no claim on at all.
100 and 300.
So the 200 says like this. There's three different manas we're dealing with over here. Mana one, mana two, mana three. You have three women over here: Sarah, Rivka, and Rachel. Sarah is 100, Rivka is 200, Rachel is 300. Rivka says to Sarah like this, look, you only have a claim on this first mana. You only have a claim on this first mana anyway. So I'm willing to forego any claims that I have on that mana. So now it's only you and so let's here. These will be the women, these will be the manas. So she says to her, I'm not going to bother with this mana. You and you.
The second one.
The second wife says to the first one, I'm not going to fight with you over the first money. I'll wait and I'll collect mine out of the second money, which you have no business with anyway. So therefore, at this point, there's only two women fighting over one money. So each of them gets 50. The Ritva points out one more detail over here that you still have. I mean, after all, doesn't it come out though that the third woman is losing out by that deal? Yeah, very nice. These two are making a deal between them, but why is that taking away from her rights? And so he answers that actually we are talking about that she agreed to that as well. She was there when they made.
There is a 600 altogether.
No, right now we're talking about there's 200 altogether.
200
the 200 altogether. So if no deals were made, we would assume the first money is split three ways. Each of them gets 33 out of it. Then Sarah goes away. She's done. Sarah goes away. She's done because the second and third money, it's true, she hasn't collected any more than that. But what can you do? There isn't enough to satisfy everybody's claims anyway. So she goes away. Each of them would get half of the next money, which would be 50 and 50. So that brings us up to now she has 83, she also has 83. If there's a third mana, which is the last case of the Mishnah, then she gets it, and so she ends up with 183. But here we're talking about that we're saying that the second one, the 200 mana one, said, you know what, I'm not going to fight over that first mana. You first and third wives can argue over it. So each of them gets 50. So therefore each of them gets 50. And it had to be that she agreed to that as well. Because otherwise, yeah, because otherwise, their deal is gonna harm her. Yeah. Okay. The question is, Yachi Ema Seifa Shal Masayim Shal Shloish Meis Shalosh Shalosh Shal Zahav. So why in the last case that why not the last case? Why in the continuation of that case we say that the second and third women, each of them ends up with 75 dinar, three gold dinar each. Why? Temelai Hasakas Napshach Mina. Why shouldn't the first wife be able to say to the second one, look, you said you're not claiming from that first money at all, so why are you getting a portion of it after all? The third, yeah.
What?
The third wife should be able to say to the second one, look, you relinquished any claims over that first money, so why are you now coming and saying that you get your portion of it? Because what are we saying? When we're saying in the Mishnah that in the case when there's only 200, we say they end up with 50, 75, and 75. How is that working? We're taking that first mana and splitting it between her and her. Because we're saying she relinquished any argument over that. She's got her 50, she leaves. Now we have left, so now we have, there's 50, there's 100, there's 50 and there's 100. There's no third mana in this case. There's 50 and there's 100. And we're saying each of them gets half of it. Each of 100, half of 150 is 75, so each of them gets 75. Why can't she argue? Look, you relinquished any claim to this, so therefore you got so therefore you're entitled to your 100 out of this. Fine, you're entitled to half of this, rather. You're entitled to 50 of this, and I'm entitled to the other 50 plus all of this. The answer is Mishum D'Amr Le Medinu Dvarim Hu D'Sal Kari Nafshoi, because the second wife will argue, I didn't relinquish my claims to the first mana at all. It's not that I'm saying I'm not going to collect out of that first mana. All I said was I'm not going to argue with the first wife, with Sarah, over anything of that mana. Once Sarah's been paid off and she's out of the picture, not paid off completely, but she's been paid her 50, which is all she's going to be entitled to get, and leaves, then Rachel will say, so then Rivka is saying, Rivka, the second wife, is saying, now I still reserve my rights to get whatever's left of that mana.
A troublemaker.
No, it's not a troublemaker.
She's a real troublemaker.
No, she's...
She is a troublemaker.
No.
Otherwise she wouldn't have said such a thing.
No, because she meant exactly that. She meant I'm willing to wait with my claim until after you've finished yours and you've left in order to not complicate. That's not troublemaking. No, but it's not chav lachem, because again, we said she agreed to it as well. She agreed to it. That's what the Ritva says. She agreed to it as well.
The third one agreed to it.
Right, but...
Now
she's coming with a taina, because she thinks that she meant, when she said, Jinu dvarim ein le'imach, she meant, I have nothing to do, I'm not taking any part of this at all.
In what? In the rest?
In the first mana. In the first mana. Just to the first mana. But I would still reserve the right to take my part of the second one. Right.
Others,
well, there's only one other in this case, but right. Yeah. But she says, no, it's not that I relinquished any claims to this at all. I just said I'm not going to worry about splitting that with the first wife, because after all, then I'm still going to have to get my part from the second one. It's going to get complicated that I have to get two different payouts.
To do that.
You shouldn't be allowed to do that.
No.
Because
no, it's
1 second, and if she hadn't done that, what would have happened? We only have 200 mana. What would have happened is each of them is going to get one third of it. Is going to get 66.
So it's much better this way.
That's why the so 1 second. First of all, I mean, like this. Instead, she's getting 50. She's getting 75. She's getting 75.
Yeah.
She's better off. She's getting 75 instead of 66.
Yeah,
it's not a machlokes. I mean, it would have been a machlokes either way. Whatever. Maybe it's what points out one reason why the Gemara wants to explain it this way, why the Mishnah would have even given it in this way rather than just saying, you know, split it evenly between them, is because, for one thing, that it's what says, because we didn't want to have to deal with fractions. Like this, the Mishnah can give us whole numbers, 50, 75, and 75, rather than having to get into fractions. Okay, next case, Hayusham Shloshmeyas V'chola, what if there were 300 mana? And we said, the Mishnah said in that case what we do in the total estate, 1, 2, 300. And again, you have three wives, 1, 2, 3, where she has 100, she's supposed to be entitled to 100, she's 200, she's 300. So we say each one of them winds up with half of what she was supposed to get. She winds up with 50, she winds up with 50, she winds up with 100, she winds up with 150. And the logic is going to be somewhat the same way. So the first question is, Shamos Hayim, Mana Shivan Bachamish Odi Isla. Why isn't the one who's supposed to be entitled to the 200? Why isn't she getting instead 175? Why is she only getting 150? I misread that. Shemosayim Mana. Why does she get a whole mana? Shivan Bachamish Odi Isla. Shouldn't she only be getting 75? If we're assuming that we're still talking about the case where the one who's entitled to the 200 had written off first mana. So she's saying, I'm not getting any portion out of that first mana.
We're still talking about the same situation of the first case?
No, we said the first case was that she said, I relinquish any argument with you over the first mana. We're assuming the last case of the Mishnah is continuing on that same those same grounds.
It's not a new case.
So well, it is a new case because before there were only 200, now there's 300.
Okay.
But it's still the same. It's still the same principle. We would say therefore she gets 50 out of this. She gets 50 out of this and leaves. You have 250. She's saying that she seemed to be saying I'm not getting any part of this. Just out of these two. One more detail I missed. Remember also the second wife had no claim at all to the third mana, so the royal silver was only 200. So once she said that she said I'm not arguing with you over this. So fine, 50 went to her, she went away. Now she's saying there's 150 left over which she has jurisdiction. 50 left from here and 100 left from here. She has no jurisdiction over this. Why is she getting 100? Why is she getting 75? Half of 150. The answer is how much more because seves balas shloish meyos lebalas masayim ulebalas mana dinu dvarim ein leimachem b'mana. Similar idea that the last case of Mishnah is talking about that the third wife, 300 Zo's wife, said to the first two, I'm not going to argue with either of you over that first mana. So the same principle then, we're saying she didn't relinquish her claims to it at all, she didn't relinquish any rights to that at all, but she is relinquishing any argument with them over it. So therefore, she gets 50 out of that and leaves. She gets the other 50 out of that. We have 200. We have 100 left. We have 100 left over which she has jurisdiction. She gets half of that. That brings her up to 100. She gets the other half of that as well as that. So she winds up with 150. And again, the idea would be the same way. Why would we have to be talking about a case? Because service law is again one reason is in order to avoid fractions.
Good way of.
Okay. This is all one answer. Rav Yaakov Nahar Pekud Mishmei de Rabbi Nama, whereas Rav Yaakov of Nahar Pekud says in the name of Rabbi Nama, a different answer. You don't have to say that we're talking about that one of them wrote that I'm relinquishing any argument over this, and then we have to discuss whether she's relinquishing the argument or the rights or whatever. How about let's take it a different way. Relation of the state business or safe of the state business. Both cases, the case where there's 200 in the estate and the case where there's 300, are talking about where they collected they collected out of the estate twice. So Rashi says we're talking about over here that they were actually toifus, that they seized property out of the estate, that they seized metaltolin to help pay for the ksuba. And metaltolin usually are not under shibur to the ksuba, but in this case Rashi is saying since they were toifus in it, then that's good enough. They're able to keep it. Other mafarshim say that the tefisis that we're talking about over here could be kauka. They took possession of the kauka because that is under shibud, whatever it is. So they're not really tefisis. So according to that, it's not really tefisis. It's rather that they knew that there was X amount in the estate, and they went to Beis Din and arranged that it's going to be paid out to them. Then they found out there's more kauka available. So tefisis would be over here not that they themselves went and seized it, but that they consulted with Beis Din. So first Beis Din knew they had X amount of property, and later on they found out they had more.
And so Beis Din gave them
the second one. But we're talking about that it was in two stages. The first case is where the 200 is talking about where there were two seizures, namely as follows. The nafla shivin b'chamish b'chad zimna. So the first time they got a hold of 75, which 75 all three of them have an equal claim on, because even the smallest one has ruksuba is 100. So each of them is entitled to 25 out of that 75. And then the next time around they get another 125. So what we do is so what do we have? We have a total of 200 now. The Balas Mosayim, the one who's supposed to be getting 200, is saying so far I only got 25. I'm still entitled to 175. We take another 75 out of that, divide it up among all three of them, and therefore she winds up so far with 50. She winds up with 50. So each of them now has 50 so far, and we still have another 50 left. We still have another 50 left to split. And we take that, and we divide that among the last two. Let me see. I think I was looking at the wrong Rashi. Let me go back over that. They got 75. So each of them, So each of them wound up with 25. I think I begin to see why we need a Nobel Prize winner to explain this. Sorry. No, I looked up today. I found some tables online that I meant to print out to bring over here to help with this, but I forgot to bring them. All right, anyway, we'll see what we can do. Okay. So each of them got 25 so far. Now they find there's another 125 available. So she says, look, I'm still entitled to another 75. So that 75 we divide up evenly among all of them. So therefore now each of them has 50. Now at this point she leaves because there's no more. It started with they got 75.
Right.
75 is not even enough even to satisfy anybody's ksuba, not even hers.
Right.
Therefore we split it evenly like in the first case of Mishnah, each of them gets 25.
Right.
Now what happens is that they find more. They find now there's another 125. So she says, out of that 125, I have jurisdiction over 75 of it.
First, when they have 75, it doesn't satisfy and all of them, right? So then they split it in three equally, 25
right.
each.
Yes.
Then they find another, how much?
125.
125 also doesn't satisfy none of
it does. One second, out of that, if we were to take 75 and give it to her, then that would satisfy her claim.
Right.
That would be that.
It doesn't satisfy.
No, of course it doesn't satisfy all of them.
So
but
why would we say just like previously, we also divided it?
Because the difference is, one second, because the difference is like this. You have to look at how much does she have jurisdiction over. She only has jurisdiction over a maximum of 100. So once we have to distinguish between among the original 75 she had jurisdiction over all of it. Therefore, to divide it evenly.
Right.
The next 125, since she only got 25 so far, she only has jurisdiction over 75 of it. She has no claim to the remaining 50.
So we
redivide equally. We take that second 75, we give 25 to each. So now they each have 50. Now at that point, she has no more claims over the rest. So the remaining 50, she wouldn't have had claims to. So therefore, we take that 50 and divide it evenly among each of them, and therefore each of them gets 25. So therefore, she winds up with 50, they wind up with 75 apiece. Safer, but states this. This is the second case, the last case the missionary is also talking about, that they had two seizures of money. 75 the first time, 225 the second time. Same idea then. What we do is, when there was 75 the first time, each of them gets 25. When the 225 the second time, she's got jurisdiction over a maximum of 75 of it. She already collected 25 and she's supposed to get 100. So again, we take that 75, divide it evenly between them. Everybody gets 50. So now everybody's up to 50. She's gone. Now we have left. Now we have left 150 to be divided. But within that also, out of that 150, she doesn't have jurisdiction over all of it because she would.
She has jurisdiction over how much of a 125.
Once we divide it up like that, what do we have right here? She was supposed to be getting 200. At this point, she got 25 and then she got another 25, which brings her up to 50. She should be getting 150 more. But we have left over here, the second time there came in 225. 75 out of that she never had any claims to at all. Or sorry, 50 out of that she never had any claims to at all, because when that 225 became available, she had received 25 so far. If we had at that point said, you know what, we're going to pay you off your whole silver, that would have been 175 left to go, and there'd still be 50. She has no jurisdiction over that last 50. So therefore, similar idea then. So we give her, we take the 225, we give 75 of it to each of them, that leaves us 150. We take 50 out of that and give it.
Take 75 to each of them?
You started with 75. You had 75 total. You got originally, and each of them got 25.
Right.
Now, 100. You have another 100. Now, second stage of 225.
Right. And you
75 of that goes 25 apiece.
25 apiece.
And then she's gone. She got her 50. That's it. She's not going to be getting any more.
Right.
Now we have left. Now we have left 150 to be split between the two remaining women. We don't just say 70
out of the
225. Out of 225 we got the second time, we already divided up 75 of it, so we have left 150. But not all that 150 would have ever been under her jurisdiction. Only 50. So therefore, we take out of that 100, we give them 50 each, and the remaining 50 goes to her. So it winds up that she winds up with 100, and she winds up with 200, with 150.
So she's got 50%, the third one has 50% of her claim.
Of her claim, and she also has 50% of her claim.
The second one has 50% of her claim.
And the first one also does.
And the first one has 50% of her claim.
But it would have been more straightforward if we just had that rent, as soon as they went and probated the estate, they found those 300. And then we would just say we divide it, evenly, 100, 100, 100. But we're not doing that. Instead, what we do is we divide it into sections as it came up. According to this answer over here, first there came up 75, then there came up 225. So therefore, each section gets divided on its own. We learn in the Braisa, through Mishnah Rav Nathan. All of this Mishnah with all these details is according to Rav Nathan. But Rebbe says, I don't agree with Rav Nathan in this. But rather they divide it evenly. Why? Because the difference is that Rashi says, when you have three people who all join together in a partnership, so each one, the more they put into the partnership, the more they're contributing towards the success of the business. Therefore, it makes sense that the profits or losses should be proportional to that. Here, it's a matter of shibud. Everybody, the husband and the chasim, all of them are under shibud equally to all three of them. Okay, it happens she only has a shibud for 100 sheep, for 200 sheep, for 300. That's not a reason that one person's claim should be stronger than the other. So Rebbe says, forget about this whole rigmarole. You just say if there's 200 left, if there's 200, then each of them gets 66. If there's 300, each of them gets 100.
That's
out.
That's exactly.
Now, having said that, though, choice for this, so that's how Rashi explains Rebbe's Shita, and the Rambam Paskins that way also. Rabbeinu Chananel, the choice was that in that case, according to Rebbe, if you have 300 and you have three women, then you just give each of them 100 and that's that. Rabbeinu Chananel in Tosfos points out a problem with that.
Of Rebbe.
So all this rigmarole that we have here, all these details were according to Rabbeinu Chananel. Rebbe just takes it more straightforward. However, Rabbeinu Chananel argues with that explanation of Rashi and the Rambam. He says when you get down to it, that still creates a big inequality. It means she's getting her entire ksuba. She's only getting a half of it. She's only getting a third of it. How is that fair? So therefore, he explains, what does Rebbe say when he says chokas b'shava means that we each one gets proportionately to the size of her ksuba. So what do we do in this case? If it's 100, 200, and 300. What we do is we divide the estate into six portions. Each one gets as many sixths as the proportion of her ksuba. So if we have, right, so if we had 200 zuz, then she'll get 1/6 of 200, which is 33. She'll get 2/6, which is 66. She'll get 99. If it's 300, similar idea. Then similar idea. She'll get 50. She'll get 100. She'll get 150.
Fractions of the time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So like I say, the Rif has a tremendously complicated explanation of how this whole thing works. People from Rabbi Goin who wanted to say that look at this thing similar to the case Rabbi Goin mentioned. It should be similar to the case of Shnayim of the Talis, where each one claims that they own the whole Talis. And what do you do? Each one winds up with half of it. It's the same thing. He wants to say you have a similar thing over here, which is with each one's claim.
No contested claim.
That's the Rebbe points out. That what are you talking about? That's there. You have each one claims I own the whole palace. Here, each one concedes. Yeah, each one concedes. Yes, you have a sub of 200. Yes, you have a sub of 300. Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. So therefore, the Rebbe argues with it. That's why he says that. What we mean is you do in fact just split it like Rashi says evenly. Not proportionate. The Rebbeinu Chananel says that it's proportionate. Yeah. The Rebbe is just that you do it even. That you just do it evenly. Each one gets 100, and that's that.
Because
it's not a matter of proportion. She is entitled to 100. She is entitled to 200. She is entitled to 300. Practically speaking, we're not able to do that because we only have 200 or 300 to work with. So instead of doing it proportionally would be more like the Schneimers and Salas business. Each one you give in proportion to their claim, which is what the Rabbi Goin says. You just split it evenly, the Rif says. So in fact, the Rambam...
But the problem with that is that when you do split it evenly, some lose more than others.
That's Rabbeinu Chananel's point. And yes, the Rambam and the Raivet have the same cloak. The Rambam paskins like the Rif, that uses by them like Rashi, they split it evenly. The Raivet says, what are you talking about? Then it's not fair. You have to do it proportionally. Okay. And the Rambam brings this whole concept in Hilchos Mahalo V'Loiva also, because you have a similar concept if you have more than one Baal Choyv. What if instead of three women, what if it was three Baal Choyv? Same idea. We're actually going to talk about that later on Sunday Dalit. We have one is owed 100, one is owed 200, one is owed 300, and all you have is 200 or 300 to satisfy all the claims. How do you do it? But I'm bringing the same idea that you have to that you pay off the first one as much as you can, and then he leaves, and then you take the remainder and split it among the second and third. Similar to what we said. Rav Nosson says over here about because even Rebbe said when it comes to Baal HaChayv, it's true. Each one. Lent a certain amount, therefore they should be entitled in proportion to what they put in. But by women, they didn't put in a certain amount. Each one has silver, therefore they should all be on an equal level. Yeah.
There's one thing that is not fair also. It's not only the proportions are not correct because they don't represent what is owed and what is available, but the fact that you start dividing the estate from, let's say, the first one and then the second one and the third one. Why? You could start dividing the estate from the third one and then the second one.
It doesn't really matter. Whichever money you consider to be the first one, she has jurisdiction over. Because whichever money you dispose of first, she has jurisdiction over it. She's entitled technically to that whole money.
Isn't the ksuba something that might put
the nixel also? That's nixel to Basel or something. Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah,
okay. Okay, fine, but, you know. but we're talking about here about the Ikkar Ksuva. We're talking, you know, we're talking about the Ikkar and the Tosfos. We're not talking about that. We're not necessarily getting into Nuchat's own bias. So that would be a different thing. Then the Mishnah continues, that we have the case with three people all invested in a business. That we said that if it becomes more or less than you, then you split it evenly. So you split it proportionally. Suppose that two people paid into an investment, one put in 100, one put in 200. Haskala answer. In that case, any profits are divided evenly among them. You don't say the one who invested the 200 is entitled to more of the profit. No. Amar Rava, Misabra Milsa, Shmuel b'Shor l'Charisha v'Omer l'Charisha. It makes sense, this din of Shmuel, if, for example, they use this money in partnership to buy an ox, which they intended to use for plowing, and in fact they're using it for plowing. You can't plow with half an ox. So each one is, even though one put in more money, the fact is, each one's contribution towards this ox and towards the plowing is an equal contribution.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No.
Because neither one is.
Forget
that if the ox dies, all they have is dog food. We're talking about right now, as long as the ox is alive, neither one could have done it without the other. Aval the Sherlock
is the same amount. That's
like so, a lot of
the time. Yes, exactly. That would be a good example. Yeah, with Shnayim Shatzur, if you have two people who couldn't do, neither one could do a malacha by themselves, and the two of them do it together, then they're both high. It doesn't matter even if one of them is stronger than the other.
No, but it's
different. But if the case is, for example, they bought an ox for plowing, but then they decided to shecht it, well, then you have meat. And each one who, they are dividing it up, they are dividing up the meat, and whoever put in more money, they should be getting more meat. In that case, then each one should get from the meat or from the profits or they were selling the meat or whatever, according to the amount they put in. Whereas Rav Amnuna says that even if it was an ox that was meant for plowing, and then they decide to go and shecht it, they still divide the profits evenly. Because after all, they still, it's one ox after all. You couldn't buy one, neither one could buy without the other. But the truth is, there are different mafarshim who explain, is Rav Amnuna just, are Rava and Rav Amnuna just discussing within what Shmuel says? Two different opinions. Here you have a general statement of Shmuel, and then you have Rava and Rav Amnuna explaining it. Or is Rav Amnuna actually arguing with Shmuel? Could it be maybe that Shmuel would say that when do I say Ashala Emsa is a case over here where you bought an ox for plowing and then you decide to shecht it? But what if, for example, Hatchila you bought it intending to shecht it? Maybe then Shmuel would say that you do go proportionally to how much they put in. So then you might have three opinions. Shmuel would say that in all cases Ashala Emsa. Sorry, I got that backwards just now. Shmuel might say in all cases that's how the answer. Rabbi would say only if you're using the ox for plowing. And Rav Amnuna would say if you bought it for plowing and then you decided to shecht it, then that's how the answer. But if clearly you bought it to shecht, then you divide proportionally. So according to that way of looking at it, you have three different opinions over here. Yes. I have a contradiction from Breitzer. Who's this contradiction again? Rashi says the question is going to be on Shmuel. Tosfos says it's on Rav Amnuna. Shnayim sheitilu l'kis zemana v'zemasayim. If two people pour money into a pocketbook, one 100, one 200, haschal lamsa, then the profits are divided evenly. My love is sure l'charush of ayim l'zvichot tuv. Sorry, the question here is on Rav. Rather, it's a later one. We're not sure what the question on. Here, so far, we have that. Let's assume that the Braitha is talking about where they bought the ox in order to plow, and now they're going to be shechting it. What do you have to Rava? And then that would be a contradiction to Rava, who said that in that case, that each one gets according to their money. The answer is one. No, not necessarily. Assume that the Braitha is talking about that the whole time they're plowing with it. They're using it for work. So what? So what are you telling me then? That if it were to be like that case where they buy it for plowing and then they decide to shecht it. My, zenotul fimosa. You're telling me that the Braisa would say that then you do go according to how much they paid? Well then, Abitani Sefer, well let's continue. The Braisa continues with the case. Lock up zebeshaloi. If each one bought using his own money, so before, up until now we're talking about they pooled their money and bought one ox. What if instead of that, each one bought different animals? The one who had 200 bought good, strong animals. The one who bought 100 bought weak animals, let's say. Well, then there's a strong animal does much more work than a weak one. Then then each one gets according to the amount he put in. Why should the Braisa have to mention a whole different case like that? According to Rabba, the Braisa should be able to distinguish even within the case where they bought only one ox. There'll be a difference what purpose they're putting the ox towards. Rabba is saying that depending what the ultimate purpose is, whether they end up shechting it or not, is whether they get paid according to how much they put in, or whether everybody gets an equal amount. The Braisa is telling us by assumption that if you buy it lacharisha, then each one gets an equal amount. Fine. Instead of showing us a case where each one gets proportional and having to bring in a whole new case where they each bought a bunch of different animals, just say within that case itself where they bought one animal, but there can be two different cases, one equal, one not. When do we say that everybody gets an equal amount if it's meant for plowing and you use it for plowing? But if you buy it for plowing and end up using it for shechting, then each one would get a coin to his money. The fact that the Braisa doesn't make that seems to be saying, therefore, the Braisa seems to be implying if they bought only one animal meaning it for plowing, then there's no way that it can be anything other than a schala answer. Which could fit with Rav Amnona and possibly Shmuel, but it would contradict Rambam. The answer is Hachinam Kama. No, in fact, that's what the Braisa means. When are we talking about that they get an equal amount? Is the ox was meant for plowing, you can use it for plowing. But if you originally meant it for plowing and then you decided to use it for shechting, then it's as if it's the equivalent to each one buying a separate animal with his own money, and then afterwards combining the money, where we say then everybody gets proportional. Yes, the fact that we're shechting the animal changes the status. Now you don't have one unit, one indivisible unit, the animal. Now you have a divisible thing. It's divisible into cuts of meat. Therefore, each one should get, so it's just the same as different animals, which are sort of divisible, and therefore everybody should get their own.
That's
how Rabba would explain the Braisa. Okay, the Gemara says, Tanan, let's consider, our mission has said, if three people put money into a pocketbook, if it lost value or went up in value, which usually would mean if they lost on the investment or they gained on the investment, kachen chokin, we say they divide, similar to what we said in the Mishnah, that each one gets proportional. My lot pachtu pachtu mamish haysiru haysiru mamish. Shouldn't that mean we should assume pachtu means that literally they lost, they put in originally 300, let's say, and now the business was only worth 250, versus haysiru would be haysiru mamish, they made a profit, now everything's worth 350. So who's the question? On Rashi says the question is on Shmuel. Shmuel had said a schaula emsa from our Mishnah, it would seem that instead you do it proportionally. Tosfos says that the question is where it was. Tosfos says that the question is on Rav Hanuna. That the again we're assuming we would have to assume that the Mishnah is talking about a kind of case where they bought an ox for plowing and then decided to shecht it. Because of course if they buy it to shecht it to begin with and then they shecht it, there's no question. They would divide it. They divide it according to the amount they put in. Everybody would agree to that. But according to Rav Hanuna, that we would say that even they buy it for plowing and then they decide to shecht it, we still go according to the original thing they bought it for. Then why would the Braisa be saying why would the Mishnah be saying that you go according to proportional? That's not what the Mishnah means when it says pachtu ha'yisiru. Ha'yisiru means zuzi chadzi. When it says that they gained, it means that they started out using old coins and they're doing business, they're wheeling and dealing with them, and now they have in their possession new coins. which are new coins circulate more easily than old coins. So they had, in those days, how well a coin would circulate depended on how much precious metal there was in it. The newer coin, the more precious metal in it, the more silver or gold, therefore it's easier to spend it. So Hoisiru means that the actual coins themselves are better circulating. So then, yes, each one put in a certain amount of coins. It's thanks to his larger investment that we have more coins over here. Therefore, logically, we should say that he gets more of the increase in value that comes from the coins themselves being newer. Similarly, Pachter would... No, it's not Revach. In other words, Revach would be something that they bought and sold merchandise or whatever, and now the actual business and the stock and everything is worth more. Here we're talking about the coins themselves are worth more.
They're not worth more. They didn't devalue.
And Postu means Hisiru Sinisa. Similarly, when we say they devalued, it doesn't just mean they wore out. It means that actually, Rashi said, that let's say the government announced that these coins are no longer legal tender. So now nobody's going to accept them anymore. The only thing they're good for now, Sinisa, is a coin on your foot. That in those times, we learned in Shabbos that you might take a coin and tie it onto your foot over there to help cushion the coin a little bit. It helps heal. So like that, that's all the coin is good for now. So similar idea. Then we would say that the one who put in more of those coins is the one who has to suffer more of that loss now. But not to say that if they actually lost money on the investment, actual money, not just the coins themselves decreasing in value, that they shouldn't share it all equally, which would be what Shmuel said.